Welcome to this episode of You're a Financial Planner, Now What? I'm your host, Hannah Moore, CFP and owner of Guiding Wealth Management, and I'm so excited to share with you this episode and this new series, if you will. I'm going to start exploring the history of financial planning. As I gather interviews of people who have actually lived and breathed the history of financial planning, I'll share them with you. I'll also be recruiting some friends of mine to join on this journey and look forward to introducing them to you soon. But as we start exploring the history of financial planning, I want to talk about how the generations within financial planning meet each other. When I talk with young people, I hope that they hear that our profession desperately needs you. We desperately need the young generation coming in and bringing in the new ideas and the energy. Like, I know firsthand, it isn't always easy. And frankly, I don't think I know of anybody who it has been easy for. Just as much as the older generation desperately needs us, we need them. We need to rely on their experience, their wisdom, and their perspective. And I'll say, it is not always easy to bridge this generation gap. There have been times I've been flat out insulted or offended by what I've been told by the older generation. I'm certain my stories are not unique, but I want to tell you to keep going if you've had that same experience. Keep making the effort to engage with the older generation and find a mentor and learn what you can from them because it is so worth it. Those relationships give your career such a perspective that I've found that being a mentee, my career, my business, my clients, everything has benefited tremendously by being in those relationships. I think of the vision statement of the FPA Next Gen Group, which is to ensure the transference of wisdom, tradition, and integrity from the pioneers of financial planning to the next generation of our profession. And guys, this is on us to do. This is our responsibility to keep moving the profession forward. So like, what does that mean? What are the practical steps that we can take to really bridge that generation gap? When I joined NextGen, one of the commitments that you made was to do at least 5 acts of honoring a predecessor each year. After you finish listening to this podcast, write a thank you note to someone who's had a meaningful impact on your career. Invite someone to lunch and ask them to tell you what it was like when they first got started in the profession. Find a mentor if you don't already have one. Engage with the older generation and learn from them because it is so worth it. I can't help but think of the quote that Isaac Newton had, "If I had seen just a little further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants." We, the next generation of financial planners, are truly standing on the shoulders of giants. So to start this History of Financial Planning series, I have a recording of Kent Fain Jr., who I would say is easily one of those giants. This recording, which as far as I can tell, was recorded in 1989 at a Texas Tech luncheon. So the audio quality is not the best, and you do hear forks tinkling and background noise. Special thanks to Dave Yeske for giving me this audio to share with you. So in this talk, Kent Fain discusses how financial planning came to be, where it was in 1989, and as he was speaking, where did he see the future of financial planning going? So to give you a perspective on who this is, Fain formed the first International Association for Financial Planning, the IAFP chapter in 1971, and served as its first president. He served as a president and chair of the Institute of Certified Financial Planners, the ICFP, from 1983 until 1985. He was the first person to officially enroll in a CFP certification program and was a member of the inaugural class of CFP certificates in 1973. One of the highest FPA honors is the P. Kent Fain Jr. Award, which is awarded to professionals who have made significant contributions to the financial planning profession in the areas of service to society, academia, government, and professional activities. So this talk was given 27 years ago, and the foresight that he gave was tremendous. It's also sobering that much of what he envisioned 27 years ago only recently happened. I will say, I've come to appreciate my FPA membership more today than I've have in the past. So I hope that you guys enjoy this session, and I will talk to you at the end of it.
Wizard of Oz was one of the movies, but the biggie was Gone with the Wind, and I think you recognize what a big winner that's been over the years. The first helicopter flew in 1939. Pan Am had its Clipper service to Europe for the first time in 1939, but something a lot more significant for all of us to me happened in 1939. Does anyone know what that was? I was born in 1939. It was a very significant event. And the reason I wanted to use 1939 as a starting point is because that's 50 years ago. And I wish I could tell you that, you know, somewhere along the way as I was growing up, that I was in a cornfield in Iowa, a as in the recent movie Field of Dreams, and I heard a voice, and it said, go into financial planning. I didn't do that. That's not exactly the way it happened. But for most of my adult life, and there's a lot of debate on when my adult life started, for most of my adult life, I have been involved in financial planning. And I have to say that I've had a vision. It's not a vision that's unique to me or I didn't originate it, but to kind of tell you a little bit about that vision, I had hoped that someday we would see financial planning recognized as a profession, or at least close to a profession, to such a degree that we would have the same status as the dentists and the physicians and the lawyers and the CPAs and so forth in our communities. I can't say we have that status now, but we certainly are a lot further along, and we certainly, you know, have the prospects or the possibilities of having that kind of status. What I want to do for a lot of you who are relatively new to financial planning is very briefly trace the development of the financial planning industry through some significant events, leaving out my birth as one of them, if that's okay. But there'll be some of the significant events in the form. You might, I guess, give credit as the father of financial planning to a man named Warren Dunton, who conceived the concept of financial planning and having a designation for financial planners. Shortly thereafter, work began really before that on the college, but I guess it wasn't formally constituted until 1972. And then the first graduating class of CFPs, of which I was a part, graduated or was conferred in 1973 in Denver. And it's really unique in that we all got together and said, you know, this is so wonderful. We need to all stay together and stay in contact. We were all so busy nominating each other for offices so none of us would have to serve. You've probably been through that in civic activities or professional activities of your own. But at any rate, the institute was formed. And to be honest, it was pretty much a non-entity and it didn't really begin to function well until the late, maybe 79 or 80, in the early part of the 80s. I'll mention a little more about that in a minute. In 1983, the registry was formed by the IAFP, which was a very worthwhile effort to identify those planners who were in public practice. The IBCFP was actually formed in 85, but again, a couple of years' work went into its formation. And I was fortunate enough to be around at the beginning of the IBCFP. In fact, I've been around the beginning of almost anything, which tells you a little bit about, you know, financial planning, which tells you a little bit about how old I am. The Institute's residency program was put into place in 1986. Phenomenally good program, phenomenally not well attended. So, you know, there are a lot of things that need to work there. The College for Financial Planning, United Kingdom, was formed in 1987. Of course, there are active financial planning groups in a number of countries, United Kingdom, Australia, to name a few. We have one registrant in Saudi Arabia, so I don't think that's exactly a hotbed of financial planning. But CFPs and financial planners are far flung around the globe. That's a little bit about where financial planning came from. And I look back and think that, you know, I got into financial planning literally in the 67, 68 range through Falker, a few other people that became financial service corporations. And I think that other firms like this were nucleating at the time around the country. And the idea was that they would put in one place a stockbroker, an insurance CLU, CPA, an attorney, and so forth, and they would collectively do financial planning for clients. And that's how I got interested in it. You know, I can still look back and see those brown brochures or the blue-gray brochures that had the same stuff. And I thought those things were wonderful. It said just so well what, you know, what I wanted to do. So I affiliated with that firm. And many of us who got our start in financial planning in the South and Southeast came through the ranks of Financial Service Corporation. But it was happening in other places, too. It was happening in California. It was happening in Texas. It was happening in Colorado. And it was good that we could all put it together and through the IAFP and the formation of the IAFP could have a way for us to go forward as at least a vocation and then hopefully sometime in the future a profession. Where are we now? Well, unfortunately, I think that we're way ahead of where we were. Certainly the last few years, the last 20 years or so has been significant. But right now, we're at a crossroads. And that crossroads offers us either opportunity or peril, depending on the way we go with that particular crossroads. The profession is somewhat in a state of disarray, and we perhaps need to take a few steps back and make the right form and go toward becoming recognized more as a profession. What I want to do is kind of talk about a few things related to this choice of either going to a profession or continuing in the state of disarray that we're in now. Many of you are probably wondering if I'm going to comment about the recent unification efforts, and I am, to say that I was very disappointed that they did not go forward, because if we need anything badly, it's a single voice that we speak with as financial planning professionals. Unfortunately, there are several organizations, each with its own agenda, its own people, and whenever you get two or more of those in a room, you're likely to have differences of opinion, and if you're lucky, they can be melded together. If you're unlucky, they can't be melded together. We were unlucky. We could not put it together in such a way that we could go forward as a unified voice. We came real close. We came so close that, you know, I take it as a personal tragedy that we weren't able to make it work. It will happen in the future. Economics and various other forces will cause it to happen, whether the current people like it or not. You know, it will happen at some point in the future. But the way it stands now is that we've got a lot of public confusion. They're confused over who are the financial planners, what is CFP, what does the registry mean, who is CHFC. The CPAs are now into it. The bankers call them their financial planners. There's just a proliferation of designations and organizations. Hardly a week goes by that I don't see some new credential or designation that is attempting to define financial planning and who is a financial planner, and to say that we're the real organization, although most of them really don't have the underpinning or the years of development that the IAFP does, or even that the Institute does. Now, in my opinion, and please understand that if I get through this a little bit without insulting most of you, I'll probably have accomplished a great deal. I've managed inadvertently to insult people in giving this talk because I've been an outspoken critic of product sponsors for a very long time, and I just ask you to bear with me on that. It's a personal quirk that I have, and I really am serious about it, but I don't want you to take too much from that. Also, I've been an outstanding proponent of the CFP designation, and I'm going to mention a little later some of the reasons why I am. To me, CFPs and financial planning are synonymous. So why do you say that? They're CHFCs and so forth. Well, we're the ones who put financial planning on the map. Back when I was ostracized and not able to belong to the estate planning council in my area as a CFP, because we talk about investments and we handle investments and that sort of thing. To today, when they would love to have me as a member, but I won't join, you know, we've come a long way as far as the recognition that we have in the public. CFPs started this movement. CFPs are still the major players in the movement. There are over 25,000 CFPs conferred today. They're being conferred at the rate of about 5,000 a year. And we're going to tell you a little bit about some of the changes that we're anticipating in the CFP designation itself, and what we've hopefully learned from things like the registry effort and so forth. Another factor about CFP is that it does appear to us that it's going to be very difficult to have uniform regulation of financial planners that most of us might welcome. And one of the things that we have as CFPs is that the IBCFP owns the mark CFPs. CFP and Certified Financial Planner, and we can remove those marks as a method of discipline within our profession, and hopefully, you know, function as something of a regulatory organization ourselves. Now, I know there's lots going on. There's talks about self-regulatory organizations and so forth, but honestly, I don't see much more happening at the federal level in terms of regulation than expansion of investment advisor rules to financial planners. And love at state levels, mostly that same type of thing, with a few states perhaps going further and having specific financial planner regulation. So CFP has history, it has identity, it has trademark protection. You say, well, what about COU and CHFC? They don't have trademark protection. Someone either didn't have the foresight or they couldn't get it at the time. And even today, CFP could not be trademarked. It would be impossible. The trademark office says, you got a trademark on that? We can't believe it. It's too generic. But we got it. And we're not going to turn it loose. We're not like CPA. CPA is not trademarked either. They don't need it. They have licensing statutes in all the states. And, you know, that's really even better than having trademark protection. But we're not likely to ever have licensing status, or at least not in my working lifetime, maybe in some of your working lifetimes. So CFP has a lot of history, background, the trademark protection. And one more thing, CFP has pizzazz. Certified Financial Planner, CFP, is a neat term. It's easy to remember. People recognize it. And one time back in about 72, when we were just about to get off the ground with our first confirmant class, we were told by the NASD, who now denied that they said it, we were told that we could not use the designation CFP. If we use it, we couldn't put it on our cards or anything. They liked something more like Certified Financial Representative, and that that would be the, if we would change to that, they'd allow us to put it on our cards and so forth like that. Well, you know, that's really sexy, isn't it? Certified Financial Representative. I guess it's better than nothing, but, you know, it's not like Certified Financial Planner. So a number of us dropped what we were doing, got together, got on planes, went to San Francisco at the time, got on a plane, and several people were appointed to carry the fight to the NASD. Chandler Peterson was one of them. You know, by whatever feelings I have about Chandler, that's one really good feeling I have about him, because for free, he represented us, and you know how eloquent he is. At any rate, after Chandler got through with the NASD, they said, you know, use CFP, use anything you want to do, just leave us alone. So we were able to use Certified Financial Planner and go forward. Now, what I want to do is talk a little bit about the present. Of course, what we're doing at the IBCFP is we're trying to set up a standard-setting board that will set standards for the financial planning industry. Because obviously, we're not setting for all the industry. All we're setting for is for CFPs. But we've done some things that I think are going to make it better as we go along. One of the things that we've done is we've opened the certification up to other colleges and universities. We presently have about 40, with recent successes being the registration of the University of California system with the IBCFP, which is a big, that's a great big accomplishment. And almost as big as registration at the University of Tennessee with the IBCFP. It's not quite as big, but almost as big. And it took me about 10 years to even get them to understand what financial planning was, and I'm not still not sure they are. But one of the things we want to do is open it up so there are alternate paths to CFP, not just through the College for Financial Planning. We've developed a very good code of ethics and disciplinary rules, which I'll mention more about. So we've made some progress. Now, as we go forward into the 90s and evolve, I want to tell you a little bit about what we should do. The thing I want you to remember is what we should do is we should do it right. We should do it right for the benefit of the public and the consumer. And anything less than right should not be tolerated. And you know, we know what's right, and we should not allow our leaders to do things that are not right if it's not in our best interest. I feel that there's a critical mass out there. You know, for instance, I felt that the Institute needed a critical mass of about 10,000 CFPs to survive. I think that's been pretty well proven as a good number. It's not terribly difficult. I figured out the budget we had, divided by people, and you know, that's how many it took. So it wasn't terribly astute observation. It just that nobody had ever done it before. The second thing is that the critical mass we really need now is about 50,000 recognized financial planners around the United States. There are like 200,000 members of the AICPA. Every village and hamlet, there's a CPA, and the public identifies with it. We can't get there for a while. 50,000 would be a real strong number to help us make some progress in that area. So remember that number, critical mass. We have a lot of problems with reaching that number. You know, the problems of how do young people get started, how do they succeed, how they stay in the business. Those are real concerns of mine because it's not easy. It's not an easy business. And, you know, companies like Pennington Bass are rare, where you have an opportunity to do an internship and to, you know, work your way through and eventually be successful in the business. Now, how do I envision the structure that might exist And let me say before I show the next slide that the reason the emphasis will be on the IBCFP and the Institute, I know this is the IFP, is because the IBCFP and the Institute do have an agreement in principle not to compete and to not develop overlapping services and so forth. And we hope to expand that. We hope to expand it totally through the unification effort. But at this stage, we're the only two that have that agreement in presence. What are our roles? The IBCFP is not a membership organization. It's just a standard-setting body. And hopefully we'll have delegates from all parts of industry and profession on its board to help with this task of setting standards, disciplining, and so forth. The Institute is a professional membership organization, as is the IFP a membership organization. And the thing that we need very badly is we need one professional organization. I don't think it's critical that there be an organization that houses all of the industry and the profession in one, although that would work. But we certainly need one professional organization, and that's why we took up the cry, one profession, one designation. You know, we basically are doing the same thing. Let's agree that we are one profession, and let's pick a designation. I think it ought to be CFP, but I'll accept something else if it's workable. Let's pick a designation. Let's get to that 50,000 critical mass, and you know, that's what we need to do. Let's talk about what each of the bodies will do, the standard-setting body and the professional association. Standard-setting tasks are setting disciplinary standards, curriculum standards, and certification standards. And Bill Anthus has coined the four E's, education, experience, ethics, and examination. So I'd like to talk about, a little bit about those three types of standards and mention the development of the new comprehensive exam that will be in place pretty soon. I don't want to bore you with the details of this slide, but the impression I want you to have is that the disciplinary process of the IBCFP is very well developed. We have staff counsel, we have staff investigators, we have a trial board. They now call it the Board of Ethics and Standards. I like the word trial board. They have an appeals board. So there is both an original inquiry, an original place for hearings, and there's an appellate place for hearings in this process. We have removed CFP designations from a few people, not as many perhaps as I would like. We've taken a lot of sanctions against people. And I did ask them when they removed their initial CFPs, because there's been a lot of controversy over whether we could do that. We can, but a lot of folks didn't think we could. We can, so I said, why don't we, when we remove them, let's pick some really bad people to, you know, so there won't be a lot of arguments. So they removed a couple of people who were in jail. And that eased the burden of the because it's hard to defend yourself extremely well when you're in jail for things that violate the code of ethics and things like that. So we're on fairly safe ground there. But now we've taken it away from some people who have made a lot of noise and threatened, and so far nothing much has come of it. You know, CFP designation isn't going to be taken away lightly. I mean, you really have to be a bad actor to lose your designation or your right to use marks. You know, it's not going to be taken away just for frivolous reasons. Although I did threaten Henry Montgomery with taking his CFP designation away from him if he didn't sign our declaration. That was in jest. The curriculum standards, I just wanted to mention again that we have over 40 colleges and universities who register. And by register, literally, they just say that, you know, our curriculum meets these guidelines that you have. And it doesn't mean that we tell them what to teach. It doesn't mean that we tell them what textbooks to use. We feel that's academic prerogative, and that really greatly strengthens the effort if you have a variety of teaching methods and ways to accomplish the same thing out there in the community. We need a lot more. And you notice Texas is something of a hotbed, as is now California in the Northeast and so forth. Colorado is always. And then we get to the four E's of the certification, which are the education, the experience, the ethics, and the examination. Those are basically the things that you have to do as young people to receive the right to use the CFP marks, and you have to continue to meet the standards in those areas in order to continue to use the marks. It's not unlike CPA in that you know, you have to do certain things to use the CPA marks continuously in a lot of states, probably Texas, I'm not 100% sure. You know, when we get this thing working well, what you'll have is a fairly full cycle thing. You know, you'll have standards that plug into the professional association activities. You'll have academic people teaching and researching, feeding that back into the organizations to help develop the standards. We'll be doing job analysis type things to know what the standards need to be, and a lot of that might be based on the academic research, what they're telling us needs to be in there, and then eventually the certification standards will change. I suspect that in 1995, in the year 2000, that today's standards may look meager compared to what we may have in the future. So I expect the evolution to be to tougher and tougher standards. There's a message in that from the students. Hurry up, get your CFP designations while it's easier than it will be in the future. It's a lot harder today than when I got mine. My son is halfway through it, and I was reviewing some of the investment stuff, and you know, it's a lot harder than I took it. Let's talk about probably our most exciting development, the single comprehensive examination. We think that to be more professional, we've got some important things to do at the IBCFP, and the wheels are in motion to accomplish these. Should be done by, I'm guessing, 91, 92, somewhere along in there. But we view the fact that we see that we need a comprehensive single examination that you will take over a 1-, 2-, 3-day period, like a CPA exam. It needs to be post-education. You know, you get your education however you want, college, Texas Tech, Baylor, University of Tennessee, University of California, and so forth. Get that wherever you choose to. But then you have to pass this examination literally to use the marks and to be in practice. It's an integrated examination. It will be different. We did some analysis work regarding the CFP examination, and I was mostly the instigator of that because I wanted to know some things about the exams. I wanted to know about the registry exam, the CHFC exams. So I had a lot of those things analyzed, and what we found out was that the CFP program as it exists today is a good certificate program. It is not really a certification exam. It doesn't fill the bill. The registry exam is a better certification exam than the CFP examinations are. So the only problem about the registry exam is it's probably not deep enough. It's not deep enough and covers all the areas that educational researchers feel that we need. So what we think you'll probably see, of course I can't tell you exactly what it'll be, but it'll probably be something like you'll have a test over foundations for financial planning, you know, the things that you have to do to get ready for financial planning. You'll probably have part of the test that'll be on the theories of financial planning. Then you'll probably have part of the test that'll be on the practice of financial planning. Yes, the CFP will be a practice-oriented designation. It will have a practice knowledge component as part of it. That is already in process. We have hoped desperately to incorporate the registry exam into that process because it would save us a lot of money in developing that part of our examination. You know, and that may still come to pass, regardless of whether the unification goes forward soon. It'll be national in scope. We'll probably give it twice a year on the semester schedule so that it fits more with the academic calendar than we do now. Remember, it's post-education. Education. By 1992 to 1995, a bachelor's degree will be required to be a CFP with suitable grandfather, but our grandmother, whatever. It will require a bachelor's degree, and we think that's an important upgrade to the program. The CFP national examination will be integrated in all aspects. In other words, it will be heavily oriented over how you apply what you know to the job of being a financial. And, you know, we've frankly copied heavily from the CPA and the medical models in terms of what they do to examine people to determine that they're fit for practice before the public. Let's move and talk about the professional association task. In this case, I use the ICFB because that's the only thing we actually have to work in agreement with. They'll be responsible for professional standards, public awareness, consumer education, and professional. We need a strong single professional association, and they need to have at their disposal a strong, single, and complete professional designation. By complete, meaning that if someone goes to a CFP, they know that this person has a bachelor's degree or equivalent, this person has taken a course in financial planning that's acceptable to the IBCFP, and they passed a national examination that says they have the tools. It doesn't say you're any good, it doesn't say whatever. You know, obviously, that's part of the process, too, is to hope that it's strong enough that only the good people get through it and get out there in front of the public. Let's look at a couple of these things in more detail. You know, we could say, for instance, that in professional standards that we're working with the regulators like the IBCFP and the just the ordinary regulators like the SEC, State of Texas, and so forth. We figure that the IBCFP already is somewhat of a self-regulatory organization. We function a lot like it already. We function a lot like the NASD for financial planners. You might be interested in knowing that Texas agrees with us because in their new investment advisor test, they exempt people who hold pass the certified financial planner examinations, which was a real coup for Larry Hayden and his efforts at the IBCFP. The professional association will identify those in public practice, and we may be the ones who set the standards, but they will actually implement it and do the identification. So that's where the registry or something like that fits in. The role of the financial planner, as far as the professional association is, they need to create public awareness and consumer education to promote the role of the financial planner. I think the IAFP does a better job of that than the institute does. The college does some of that. But, you know, if we could put all our budgets together, we could really do something significant in those ideas, in that area. We need to create a strong professional identity. And again, without that strong single professional credential as identity, we're going to have a tough road to hoe. Let me say it again, because, you know, I know you're going to get tired of hearing this, but we need a single professional association. We need a strong, complete professional designation. Need to speak with one voice. And the last part of that, which I mentioned earlier, but I want to reemphasize, is that whatever we do needs to be in the public domain and for the public benefit. Not for the benefit of product sponsors, not for the benefit of the professionals or whatever, but for the public and the consumer. That's the most important thing that we can do. And lastly, I want to talk about what you can do. First of all, let me summarize by saying that the vision that I had a long time ago has not been realized. Absolutely, we do not have the status that physicians and dentists, and I'm not sure we have the same status as chiropractors and, you know, whatever, who are somewhat a little bit less than physicians and dentists. But I can tell you what we're doing. The IBCFP and the Institute are moving ahead to establish the CFP as a practice-oriented, completely professional credential in the public domain, serving the public and the consumer. We already have some recognition. You know, Texas is an example. The SEC and one of their major tomes on financial planning said that clearly the CFP was the major designation in financial planning, would probably be the survivor. We hope they're right. So we already have some things in place, but let's end by talking a little bit about what you can do to help this effort. Well, the first things you can do is you can use the CFP marks and use them well and carefully in your community. You can use whatever practitioner statuses are available, like the registry, and whatever new practitioner status that's going to come from the Institute, which we hope they'll coordinate with the registry effort. More importantly, though, you can be an example in your community so that people look at you and say, that person is a CFP, and that's a good person. I enjoy dealing with him or her. And it's a worthwhile effort. That'll do more for the profession than probably anything that we can do. You know, I look back at things that happen, and I enjoy working with clients. I really enjoy working with clients. And I enjoy helping people, whether they have a lot of money or whether they don't have a lot of money. In fact, some of my best satisfactions come with helping people who really don't have a lot of resources. I think we've got to do that. We're not to be social workers for the rich, if you'll pardon the pun. We need to be people who help other people accomplish their goals and meet their needs, regardless of their station in life. And, you know, we laughingly, people will ask me, you know, well, what does it take to be a client of yours? And I say, well, it's really tough. You know, I've got several definitions. I've got the foggy mirror test. You know, if you can fog a mirror, you can be a client. That's one. I've got, you know, if you can walk and breathe and write a check, you can be a client. You know, I'll even help you with the ladder if you need help. I'll fill it out. All you got to do is exit or sign it. So, but at any rate, I think we've got to show our willingness and our desire to help the public, and that will go a long way toward helping us. The vision can be realized. if you've seen the movie Field of Dreams, which needless to say made an impression on me, it's a mystical movie and it's fun, but if you'll remember, the people we're trying to sell are the public. We're trying to get the public in our camp and then through them the media and so forth like that. You remember in the movie, the voices in the cornfield, he kept saying, no, this isn't heaven, this is ours. But the voices in the cornfield said, if you build it, he will come. If you build it, he will come. And we didn't know what that meant. It took us all the way through the movie to figure out what that meant. And I'd like to paraphrase that a little bit and tell you that what we ought to do is, if we build it, they will come. If we build it, they will come. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of You're a Financial Planner, Now What? I hope you found this episode as engaging as I did. We truly have so much to be grateful for those who went before us to make financial planning what it is today. And don't forget, as you finish this episode, write a thank you note to someone who has made a meaningful impact in your career. Invite someone to lunch, just listen to how they got started in the profession, or find a mentor if you don't have one. Engage with that older generation because it is so worth it for you, and it is worth it as we take on the burden of moving our profession forward. Thanks for listening.